You're listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio with Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. We're going to be talking, we come together on this show every month to talk about senior issues. And today we're going to be talking about the topic of transition from a medical care facility like a hospital. When someone goes in there for an illness and then they go home, what happens after that? Because that is a whole nother realm of potential care and needs that people face, especially when they're older. So, hi, Doug.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. So, now suppose we were talking a little bit before the show about, you know, reasons why people go into the hospital. So, you may go into the hospital for an illness like pneumonia. You might go into the hospital because you break a limb. Those could be very different things in terms of the outcome when you get out of the hospital. So if someone is getting out of a hospital and has a short-term recovery, that's one issue. But what if there are lingering chronic consequences to your illness? That's really what we're talking about here, right, today.
Right, right.
So let's just talk about that. Let's just talk about when somebody gets out of the hospital after, say, a debilitating illness that might linger once they're out. What are some of their options?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing you want to make sure when you're getting ready to be discharged is that you're able to track the changes that have happened while you're in the hospital. You want to be able to come out of the hospital with an updated meds list. You want to come out with something that has noted in it what your follow-up appointments are with who and where. You want to be able to get an idea of if it is something that's lingering or chronic, you want that defined. You know, what is the diagnosis? So you want those things in order because if you're, again, like you were talking before about, if it's just in and out, you know, you go in and you're 25 years old, you go in and get your appendix out, you heal up, and you go home, you go on with your life. If you go in and there's some sort of severe infection that they can't quite get a hold of, there's something else that go on, there's things that need to be done that are going to be ongoing and require follow-up treatment and all, that's a whole different thing. And sometimes it just does depend on age. You break a bone when you're 25, yeah, you'll heal up, you'll go home. Chances are you'll be walking on it when it's still broken anyway because you're 25. But if you're 95, that's a whole other ball game. So you have to really watch for clots. You're not as active, all of that stuff. So, yeah, there's a big difference between, you know, what happens when you come out of the hospital. But for today, we are talking about you're coming out. You need to know what's going on. You need to know what your follow-up is. But then you also have to start thinking about, can I go back and live the way I lived before? One of the things I want to talk about on the discharge piece, though, is people can go to Medicare.gov and they can do a search for a little pamphlet. It's just like four or five pages called Your Discharge Planning Checklist. And it has sections in there for your new meds, follow-up notes, what your next appointments are. But the cool thing is, too, if you're already in a situation where there's somebody who's been in the home helping to take care of you, you have a caregiver, or you plan on having a caregiver, there's a section in there for the caregiver to fill out also and to get the information. So I really recommend that. I was, we were talking earlier when I was in the hospital not too long ago, and part of it was there was an infection after the surgery and da-da-da-da-da-da, so I was in there for a while. But if you would have asked me when I got home, well, show me your discharge information. I'd look at my wife and go, Carol, what's my discharge information?
Sure.
Because I was pretty out of it.
Yeah.
But we did track it all. And I just encourage people to, you know, make the little notebook, do that kind of thing. Because, okay, so now you know you're going home. You're starting to think, though, can I go home and live the way I was before? Maybe. As we get older, and everybody's getting older, nobody's getting younger. But as we get older, sometimes it does take longer to heal and that kind of stuff. But also there are those issues that occur that may not be, well, we were talking about surgery. If you reach a certain age and you have certain diagnoses, continual surgeries may not be an option. So you have to consider that. You have to consider, am I able to take care of myself and maintain my health? Am I able to cook for myself, shop for myself? Am I able to do these type of things when I get home? If not, well, maybe then temporarily at least, I'll need someone to help me out. And if it turns into an ongoing thing, that's one of the options. You can stay home. You can get a caregiver in the home. If you're low income, you can apply for Medicaid. You might have Medicare already, but Medicare doesn't really pay for in-home care. But Medicaid will, or as they call it in Washington State now, Washington Apple Health, which I guess just sounds cuter. So, but they will pay on certain programs. And then that will be a caregiver that will come into your home and, you know, help you with your schedule. And so that's one option. And a lot of people do that because there's a lot of supports out there now. You can have caregivers that will come in and help you with cooking, cleaning, help you with bathing and personal care. You can have home health come in. That the doctors can write an order for home health nurses to come in if there's wound care or any of that type of follow-up. There's personal response units. So, you know, the I've fallen and can't get up, and those have come such a long ways that they have them now that are sensitive enough that if you do fall and you're unable to press the button, it knows when you fell. Mm. It can tell the difference, and it'll contact people. They also have units that will strobe a light or make a sound to remind you to take your pills. I mean, there's all kinds of things out there. So going home after a hospital stay really is a viable option for a lot of people. Now, one of the issues also that comes along with that, though, is do I want to go home and be alone? You know, sometimes an incident or some sort of chronic disease that's affecting us makes us a little fearful to be alone. Others, like you've mentioned, I'm going to be alone. You just stay out of my face.
That's right. That was my dad. The whole thing of not wanting to be alone to any club that would have you as a member, that Groucho Marx thing. Yeah, that was him. He was really not interested in anyone chatting him up.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people like that. I've had clients in the past when I was a case manager that I know I was annoying them just by being there, and they were pretty good about letting me know that I was annoying them by being there, but recognizing that, okay, I know you have to talk to me so I can continue to get help, right?
Right.
So there are those type of people, but there are also those people who just hadn't thought about how alone they are. Living in, say, the big family home, and, oh, but I couldn't leave this, all these memories. Well, sometimes those memories can be a little depressing when you're the only one in the house anymore.
And also, you know, another thing that just came to mind, configuration of a home. Like if you have suffered an illness that is going to leave you with some sort of a disability in terms of being able to get around, a house with lots of stairs
Absolutely.
Is a difficult challenge. If your bedroom's upstairs, if there's stairs, I mean, if you look around Astoria, there are plenty of homes with lots of stairs
Yes.
going up to the front door
Mm-hmm.
and steep driveways. And so that might be an issue just in terms of being able to get around inside your own house.
Right, right. And there are a lot of people that maybe they can't afford to remodel their whole house. But what they do is they take, you know, maybe a section of the living room or a room off the living room if they have a spare room. And a lot of times people, if they need it and they're on Medicaid or some sort of other insurance, they can get hospital beds and that kind of stuff, right?
Okay, that's great.
So they sort of set up a bedroom downstairs so they don't have to go up and down the stairs.
So things to think about if you have a home that you don't want to leave, you might have to modify how you
right.
live in that space.
Right, and if you end up using a wheelchair or sometimes even a walker, you might see about what it would take to widen the doorways, especially right. going into the bathroom, that
right.
type of stuff, and grab bars, all of that kind of stuff. Also, getting in and out of the house, there are different community groups and programs that will help build ramps so people can get in and out of the house with their walkers or wheelchairs.
Excuse me. And there are wheelchairs. I remember buying a small wheelchair for my dad that was sort of, I think they called it a personal wheelchair, but it was a little bit narrower. And so it could go through the doors in his house.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were normal-sized doors, whereas the kind of wheelchairs you see if you go into the hospital and they put you in a wheelchair, they're pretty wide. But
right.
this one was narrow enough so that it was a lot better mobility inside of a house. So there are those options for those kinds of
right.
chairs.
Right, and those are really handy, too, for travel.
Yes.
Because they fold down really small.
And they're pretty light.
And then you can just take them out, open them up, and go where you need to go.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of options like that and a lot of community groups, and you know, not just our agencies, but a lot of community groups that will do long-term loans on equipment. So well, I can't afford a hospital bed. Well, let's try the Lions or whoever it is that's doing that in your community, because they have them for long-term. They call it, we will loan it to you for how long? Until you don't need it.
Right. Yeah.
So it's there's all those options. And a lot of people are really good about donating their stuff when they no longer use it.
Mm-hmm.
So with all of that, excuse me, there's all kinds of supports to keep you in the home if you want to stay home. A lot of times people too will, you know, there's the option of moving in with the relatives and that kind of stuff. In our situation with my father-in-law, it was sort of, we're making the dining room into his bedroom downstairs.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, he had the oxygen and all that kind of stuff and stayed at home until the end. My mother-in-law, because she would have been alone staying in that home, she moved in with us for the past last 6 or 7 years of her life. So those are kind of options too. One caution there is sometimes if there haven't been really positive family dynamics most of your life, it's probably not going to get better when somebody gets sick. And we as people tend to feel, well, I have to have mom come and live with me. I just couldn't live with myself if I didn't offer it. And mom's going, yeah, I don't want to do that. So there's discussions that have to take place.
Wow.
So, and it, again, if they reach a point where, you know, I really don't want to be alone. I know I can have someone come in once in a while, but this house is too big or it's too cold or it's too, you know, I want to be around some activity, you know, during the day. Well, then there's different options. One of the options where is called an adult family home. Now, in Oregon, it's called an adult foster home, AFH. Now, these are generally for people that have some pretty high needs because you get a lot of individual attention. You'll have maybe, the limit in Washington is like six people living there, six residents. And you usually have two to a bedroom. But then you have a common area for games, crafts. There's usually going out in the community doing different activities, that kind of stuff, communal meals, all of that. You're not alone. There's people you can visit with. Oftentimes, we've had clients that say, well, I want to go to this adult family home because my friend is there. So you go there, and then you're living in the same house and, you know, sharing the same activities and a lot more attention if you need it. They can also have nurse delegations, so a registered nurse can come in if there's nursing issues. And so those are available. Not as many as we need in our communities, but it seems to be a trend where people are starting to swing into starting some more up again. So because the need's there.
Well, you know, I know a little bit about that. I have a friend who lives in Kirkland who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. He's in his 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And he is in one of those adult foster homes because he was really in a situation where he really couldn't be left alone. And his family members had to go out and go to work. And even trying to bring in caregivers didn't quite work out. And so this seemed to be the best solution for the family. But he is in a house where he has his own room, and there's a family running it, but it is specifically for people with Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a memory care foster situation. But that's a way that it sort of takes a lot of the fear for the family out of
his
welfare, you know, because he's always has somebody there to – he has privacy because he has his own room, but he always has somebody there to help or to, you know, make sure he's okay.
Absolutely. And those are becoming more and more common, the specialty adult family homes, due to memory care and that type of thing. But there's also some for people who are developmentally disabled. There are some for mental health. So they're becoming more specific. Memory care is the big one, though. That is the big one that's coming up in. We'll be talking about assisted living facilities in a minute. And there's a lot of memory care units there, too. And it's very... The adult family homes, I think, one of the pluses of those, not only they're smaller, they don't have that institutional feel because it's a home. You know, it's somebody's house. The owners, you know, usually live there and they're, you know. So, and because of that, each one has their own distinctive personality. So I encourage people when you're thinking about possibly going to an adult family home, adult foster home, go check it out because they aren't the same. I mean, you can go online and go, well, I guess they're all the same. But no, you need to go and you can sort of get the sense of what kind of home it is, what personality of the home, of the staff, of the owners. Is it someplace that looks, oh, this feels kind of familiar and comfortable? Or is this, I was never this sophisticated my whole life and I'm not going to be comfortable here? You know, that type of thing, which is, I guess, where I would end up. So it's good to go. And, of course, what does it cost? You know, is there the possibility of having my own room? You know, all questions that you need to ask before you go, just like you would if you were going to stay anyplace.
So now what if that adult family home isn't what you want to do? So we were talking before the show about assisted living, which is kind of a broad category of how you can live. But that's almost like being in an apartment, right?
Right. Assisted living facilities are, it's basically an apartment. Could be a studio apartment, could be a one-bedroom apartment that is in a residential setting, but support is there if you need it. excuse me. The meals are provided for, the laundry is provided for, housekeeping, that kind of stuff. You're not restrained from leaving or anything like that. It's just, I always think of it, okay, it's an apartment with help. So if you, and there are different levels of assistance. If you need help sometimes ambulating or you're in a wheelchair or something like that, some assisted livings, that's a certain level. If you need your meds administered to you, that's another level. It goes 2 to 3 levels. It doesn't approach a skilled nursing facility. If you need 24/7 skilled nursing services, yeah, you have to go to a nursing facility, basically. The assisted living will take different levels up to that and work with you to, they have nurses on staff, they'll work with you to stabilize any situation and expand it. They do a lot more things with their buses too, because they're bigger. They'll go out on trips down to different places and into the community, to the fairs and the oyster feeds and, you know, crab bakes and all that kind of stuff. And it's, they're usually about, the ones around here are usually 30 to 40 people in a unit. There are bigger units and smaller units. There's also some that either are or are moving into independent living. And that's usually on the same campus as an assisted living. Basically, it's someone that you're saying, okay, yeah, I can live on my own. I can go to the store. I can get my own stuff. I can fix my own food and stuff. But it's, I feel more secure if I know that if I do need help, I can go across the street and I can go to the assisted living and they'll help me out. So they're trying to build these campuses of right. that type of thing so people can make the transitions if they want to. So, and again, with the assisted living, everyone is different. Some of them you go into and you feel like you're walking into an apartment building. Some of them you walk into and there's a lobby and a library and all that kind of stuff. So it pays to go and see. And to talk to the staff and to talk to the residents, of course, and just see what's going on. Talk to people in the community that you may know. You know, what's the reputation like? That kind of stuff. The ones around here are really pretty positive from all that I've heard. And although we need more of them. So assisted living is something that a lot of people do consider. And again, some of them, some of these places you can go into and out of, you know. I mean, if you go into an assisted living and you're thinking, okay, that was okay. I enjoyed that, you know, but I really don't need the help anymore. And so, you know, why am I paying for an apartment with help when I don't really need the help anymore? So you move out, you know, get your own place, maybe hire a caregiver for just couple days a week if that's what you need. So it isn't like you go in and it's carved in stone, you'll never leave again, right?
Right, right.
People kind of think that, but no, it's still about choice.
So it's not like a downward slope that you can't get off of.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
It's kind of like this isn't about living situations per se, but it's kind of like hospice. Hospice can go either way. Hospice just means that there's a terminal diagnosis. You're generally, they say, well, within 6 months. I had clients that were on hospice off and on for 2-3 years.
Wow.
Because, you know, it would just sort of.
Wow.
One gentleman said, well, the doctor said I had 6 months. And I said, well, so you're not getting out of bed for 6 months? And he said, well, why should I? But he had a little dog. And he goes, well, I get up to take care of the dog. And, well, then the dog would want to walk. Well, I take the dog for a walk. And so this little dog sort of got him re-going
again.
Wow,
that's great.
He said, finally, I decided, it's way past 6 months. I'm not dead. I'm getting up.
Wow.
So
you know, that's great.
You know, but it comes and goes. And yeah. The same thing with deciding where you're going to live. It may be just what you need for a while. Or it may be something that you try and went, okay, I thought I wanted company, but I didn't want this much company.
Right.
So I'll do something else. Yeah.
Wow. Then you get into the, so when people do progress to the point where they need more care than an assisted living place can offer them, what's after that? What's next?
Well, again, if you looked at a progression, and we kind of came at it the other way, but in my mind, the progression is assisted living, and then if you need more individual help, then the adult family home, because you know fewer people, all of that
right,
kind of
more
stuff.
More concentrated care
right.
on a
you
fewer people.
You need nurses coming in, but not all the time. And then the next step where you need more and more skilled nursing would be the skilled nursing facilities. Mm-hmm. And they still have long-term residents in them.
And there are memory care units in some of those, too.
Oh, memory care, yes. Right. And behavior. Yeah. There's behavior units.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
that people are not, they've got a good memory, but they've got behaviors due to, it could be anything, Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Could be some stage of Alzheimer's where you mm-hmm. get into the aggression and that kind of stuff. Mm. So
then, I guess, you know, so if we're looking at it from a progression point of view, then you do get into hospice. And I think most people think of hospice as if you get a terminal diagnosis of a disease. But I know that I can just say from my experience with my father, who died recently, is that he was really just frighteningly healthy overall. But when he started to lose weight, when he had lost a certain percentage of his body weight, he was eligible to go into hospice on that basis. And so I just wanted to put that out there because most people think, well, if I'm not dying of a disease, I can't get that support. And I would say that for him, for my father, and for my family, me, and my dad's caregivers, it was really huge to get that help from hospice. I mean, and he had the option to get well if that had
right.
been passed.
Exactly.
I mean, it wasn't like we were you know signing his death warrant. It was just that having the skilled medical assessment of him, because they would come out a
yes.
couple times a week, it really let us know that we were doing the right things. You know, because when you're caring for somebody in the home, you're always wondering if you're not a medical professional yourself, am I doing all I should be doing? And they came in and were able to let us know that we were doing all that we could be doing, and they provided that support. So I think, you know, there in this piece of people being cared for, there's the people around the person being cared for, and there's pressure on them as well, and there's stress on those people. And I think that these support services, like all the things that we've been talking about, can provide a great deal of relief to family members, most of whom are working full-time trying
absolutely.
To do this at the same time. So I think there's just a lot to be said for all of these services that go way beyond the person who is the person being cared mm-hmm. for. It's such a relief to know that your loved one is in good hands, and it's not just you who are trying to handle it all.
Absolutely, and that's one of the fastest growing programs we have in the Olympic Area Agency on Aging is our Family Caregiver Support Program. And that is kind of sort of runs alongside some of these or sometimes is before you get into having some caregivers come into your home all the time. And the whole point of the Family Caregiver Support Program is not to take care of the client that needs the services, but take care of the caregiver who's providing the care, family members generally. And it's absolutely right that the stress is there because having been there myself and you too,
yeah, right.
you're constantly wondering, I hope I'm doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
And we all feel that sort of minor terror at we are not medical people,
yes.
but yet they're expecting me to do this and that.
Yeah.
So that's what's so important about the Family Caregiver Support Program, which offers counseling, respite, and different things like that. But also going back to hospice, because what I noticed and what you mentioned was that the hospice workers come in, and yes, they're taking care of the patient, but they're also checking on you. How are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is everything going okay? Mm-hmm. How are you? Do you have any questions about the things you're doing? I mean, they're trained so well to sort of help support the family that I was very impressed with that, too.
Boy, I was, too. It was such a... It was such a great thing to know that they were there. And I think as people get toward the end of their lives, often there are a lot of emergencies. I mean, when you're not a doctor or a nurse and your loved one has a crisis, the only thing that you know how to do and can do is take them to the emergency room.
Exactly.
I had some more I mean, I know that when I walk into the Astoria the Columbia Memorial Hospital emergency room, they say, "Hi, Joanne." So it's like cheers, but not the fun part, you know. And so when they know you on a first name basis in the emergency room, you know, you've been there too much.
Everybody knows your name.
Really? And so, but I mean, so that was my only option. And when the hospice, and I imagine when these other care options come into play, you have other options. The hospice people said, no more ambulances, no more flashing lights. Right. You call us. And right. So what an immense comfort that is to know that you're not in it alone as a non-medical caregiver, which most of us are.
Absolutely, absolutely.
A non-medically trained caregiver. Mm-hmm. You know, so anyway.
And it's just as important to be a source of information to the family members who are taken care of, mm-hmm. as it is to be an encouragement to them. I mean, and that's what I found it with the nurses for home health and for hospice in particularly. They are very empathetic, and they recognize it. I mean, you don't have to ask for kudos. They come in and go, you know, you're doing a really hard job,
yeah.
but you're doing okay. You're
yeah.
doing okay, you know.
Yeah, so. And that was just immensely great.
Absolutely.
So, I think we are getting to the point in the show where we should give contact information. So the other thing about what Doug does, he's Olympic Area Agency on Aging, but his agency provides all sorts of information about senior issues, not just what we're talking about today, but pretty much any question you could have about how to handle a question with senior issues. You could call this organization and they would either be able to help you or direct you to someone who could. So it's a tremendous resource here. A lot of the services are free, and I can't say enough about what they offer. And in Oregon, we have Northwest Senior and Disability Services, and which you can look up online. You can Google them. But Doug, tell us how to get in touch with your organization.
Well, we have two offices. In Long Beach, our number is 360-642-3634. In Raymond, it's 360-942-2177, and we're at www.o3a, and that's the number 3.org.
Okay, and so this week you've been listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I've been here in the studio this month with Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. We've been talking about transition from hospital care to home and what happens when you have had perhaps a difficult illness and you might need care when you get out of the hospital. So we've been talking about that today, what the options are going forward for someone in that situation. So thank you for listening to A Senior Moment. We'll be back next month.